Hysteria is brought to you by Books. This Mother's Day, give mom her flowers. She deserves the best. That's why you should send her farm fresh flowers from Books. That's short for bouquets.
And right now, you can get 25% off your entire Books purchase. Here's why everyone likes the Books company. Books is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano,
which I love. Books has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Books is simple. Go online, pick the delivery date, and you are done. Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now. And with 20% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma. Erin, I love my Books. I love a flower that lasts forever, and my Books arrangements really do last a full solid week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some sitting on my kitchen table right now, and they've been there for several days, and usually when I buy them at, like, the grocery store, they're sort of, like, starting to crap
fade out
pretty quickly. Yep. Not with Books. They stick around. They look beautiful. I like how they kind of slowly open up and become even more beautiful as they sit on your, you know, wherever
Absolutely,
you display them.
Because they're that fresh. So go to Books.com and use promo code Hysteria for 25% off. That's Books.com, promo code Hysteria. Books, promo code Hysteria.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I'm going to ask you a little bit of a probing question.
Okay.
Coming in hot early in the morning. When's the last time you had a breakout, like a teenage, reminiscent teenage breakout on your face?
A teenage breakout. Erin, I'm going to be honest with you. I get one right around this time every month on my chin. My adult cystic acne is brought on by my period. It lasts for 3 weeks, just in time to get it again.
Oh, wow. What a gift. What a gift.
40s are awesome.
I can't wait. So, you know, I was told by pop culture that when you get pregnant, your skin glows. You get great skin and great hair. False. My pores are partying like it's 1999 on my face this entire time. I've never had a problem with acne, thank goodness. It sounds like a really awful thing to go through. But my skin is at its worst right now. It's never, even when I was a teenager, it was never like, if you get up close to it, it's like, gah. And to make matters worse, because of the Delta variant, I'm masking. A Delta variant plus, like, immune system being repressed by my condition. I'm masking when I go into, like, mixed company indoor spaces now. And so I'm getting, like, maskne plus whatever this hormonal shit is.
That's so one. I also am masking just because Delta variant. It's like, why not when I go into big stores? But I have to say, from here, you look good.
Well, thank you. I am currently in a child's room.
I see.
In Duluth, Minnesota. Yeah, this is not my stuff. I'm sitting in front of a rocking pink flamingo.
What's best is that not only that, but this week you have a handheld mic and you literally look like you're on location from somewhere crazy.
This is Erin Ryan reporting from a child's room. I have decided to investigate what a child was after becoming pregnant. So far, I can see they appear to be smaller than adults. They play with a lot of pink things and dolls and seem to sleep in wooden cages. Back to you, Alyssa.
See, this is great already.
This week, we're joined by Megan Gailey and Dana Schwartz to tackle the following questions. What is it about Texas politics that generates so much fresh hell and produces so many hellraisers? When people underestimate you, does it help to just let them and then teach them a lesson? And which panelist is the latest victim of the tragic engagement epidemic to strike this very show? All this and more right now. Okay, so the news. Alyssa, we have discussed the fact that we predicted that July would be annoying, as June was annoying. And July has been pretty annoying so far, with a couple of potential bright spots. So this is a sort of lemons and lemonade kind of news segment today. You know, lemonade's a great summer beverage, so how do you cure the July blahs than with taking the lemons that the news gives you and making them into some lemonade? So, in that spirit, let's start with Texas, where the stars and where the stars at night are big and bright, and the governor's brain is smooth and plain.
Off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head. Greg Abbott sucks. He just, that bitch cannot govern. He sucks so bad. I feel so bad for the good people of Texas that they have to deal with him and their resting corruption face LG. Anyway. Okay. So Texas passed a new abortion law recently. And when it passed, we knew it was pretty bad. We knew that it was a 6-week ban on abortion, which is essentially a ban on all abortions because most women don't know they're pregnant when they are quote unquote 6 weeks pregnant, because that happens 2 weeks after you are supposed to get your period. So
right.
And most OBGYNs won't even see you until you're 8 weeks along to confirm a pregnancy, because you can't detect a pregnancy that early with most ultrasound machines, with many ultrasound machines. So it's essentially a ban on abortion. But to make matters worse, this law depends on people snitching on each other.
This is crazy.
Yeah. So I was thinking we could call it the Karen Law for our purposes, K-A-R-E-N, which stands for Kiss the Ass of Religious Entitled Narcs.
Whoa.
Or Keep Abortion Reporting to Evil Neighbors. Yeah.
It's fucking incredible. You are really firing on all cylinders today.
It's because I'm in a child's room. And it's
because you're reporting live from a wooden cage.
Yes. but Alyssa, like, can you kind of share some of the reasons why this is so egregiously bad?
Like, Aaron, I guess the best way to describe it is by a scenario that if you and I, if you and I were in a grocery store and you were telling me that you had an abortion, and the checkout clerk overheard us and saw us get into an Uber, and like, no, we would have to be, she would have to help us find the Uber that took you to the abortion clinic. But basically, if people can find out that you had an abortion, they can sue anyone who helped you have the abortion. So if your neighbor finds out that you're on your way to have an abortion and they can see the Uber driver's license plate, they can sue the Uber driver for $10,000 for taking you to your abortion. It is essentially the most malevolent episode of the Andy Griffith Show. It is like deputizing Barney Fife. It's like citizen's arrest. It's like when in Mayberry, when someone would make a citizen's arrest and Barney Fife would go batshit, they literally have deputized a bunch of people who would drive Barney Fife batshit to go around and fucking like sue people who they think may have helped you have an abortion in Texas.
It's actually crazy. And it really encourages the worst. It encourages the worst behaviors by the worst of us. So, yeah. And like, it's supposed to take effect September 1st. So people who live in Texas are not currently living under this reality. And we also don't know if anybody's going to sue to try to like stop the law. We can assume that they might. But the thing is, organizations that do things like file lawsuits to prevent abortion restrictions from going into effect don't really share their legal strategy like way right. in advance. So we won't know until, you know, the rubber hits the road when it comes to that. But, you know, if this law goes into effect, I have a little bit of a trolley solution to the people who have to be stuck living in Texas.
What?
Lie and say you're having an abortion when you're doing something that is easily provable as not having an abortion. Before you get into an Uber to go to your mom's house, say, on my way to my abortion. Like, yell it.
Obfuscation.
Exactly. It's like a DDoS attack. Overload the circuits. No matter where you're going or what you're doing, unless you're going to have an abortion, put off to have an abortion. Here are the people who are helping me. And the people who are helping you should be people who are not helping you and have very easily provable alibis. That's, I think, the only way to combat this law.
I feel like we have found our call to action for all of September.
Exactly. Also, yes, over report. Report that, like, lie and say you're having, if you're a dude, I think that's a great way for men to help out. Yell, I'm off to have an abortion before you go to do anything. If you're going to go buy a car, tell the car dealer, I'm going to use this car to drive people to have abortions. And
you know what? Test drive a car. Say you'll be back after your abortion.
Right. Overload the system. That's the only way. This is an extremely frustrating law and we're laughing, but it's like, it's so ridiculous that it's, I don't know what else we're going to do.
I know. No, it's, we're laughing because it's so laughable, but this is fucking, it's lunacy. And it is just another one. We saw this in our research. 2021 legislative session has set the record for the most abortion restrictions signed in a single year in the United States. Like, it's fucking nuts.
I don't know. Is this like part of a freak out about a drop in birth rate by people who are unwilling to take any steps whatsoever to make motherhood or parenthood more economically feasible to people?
I think it is maybe more. I think that's part of it. I also think that there's just like a fringe group that's been waiting in the wings for their opportunity. And this is, you know, at some point, I hope, we hope, the world, America, is going to wake up and be like, yo, we've been doing some real crazy shit the past couple of years. And I think that they're all trying to get this in under the wire. Be like, you know, this is our time. Strike now. I mean, Aaron, this law is so fucking nuts. I had to read it multiple times to be like, this can't be. They're making a law that law enforcement is not meant to engage in. It's just citizens. Just go get them.
Yeah, that's why we have to overload the system. And I'm going to say this, and this is a wildly irresponsible thing for me to say, and I may have to retract it. But if you're a woman in Texas who has an abortion after September 1st, and you want to talk about it with someone, but you have nobody to talk about it with, I'll sign an NDA. You can talk about it with me.
Me too.
We'll sign NDAs.
We'll do it.
We'll be there for you. We'll be your pal. And I bet, you know what? I bet if you live in another state and you have friends who live in Texas who might need someone to lean on or talk to, just, you know, offer to sign an NDA. I will not disclose you exerting control over what happens within your own skin because that is your fucking business and not Greg Abbott's business. And not any of the other busybodies who passed this law's business. It's nobody's fucking business but yours. Ugh, terrible, terrible law. Okay, so we talked about lemons and lemonade.
Yeah.
Texas is also in the midst of a special legislative session that was called exclusively to pass a very restrictive voting law that most citizens are against. Most voters are against it. But because of the way that Texas is represented in the legislation, most legislators are for it because they're mostly Republicans. So this is the lemonade moment in Texas. I believe 60-something Democrats, we don't know the exact number. During this special session, Democrats decided that they needed to resort to desperate measures in order to keep this law from passing. And so they chartered two private jets and they got the hell out of Dodge. Alyssa, you want to talk a little about that?
So here's what I love. First of all, they had to do this like super cloak and dagger because they didn't want anyone stopping them. So they flew out. And if you've listened to any of the members of the legislature on television in the past 24 hours, one state legislator, her clothes were still damp that she packed into her suitcase to take to Washington, D.C. So here is the most interesting part of what they – well, aside from doing what they did, is that they decided to go to Washington, D.C. and make the case to lawmakers that this is how bad it is. This is what they've had to resort to stop the laws. They need the John Lewis Voting Rights Act passed. They need H.R. 1. They need help. And they are meeting with people. They have a meeting set with Senator Joe Manchin, which I think is really encouraging that he is taking that meeting. And their sort of very bold and flashy, you know, or splashy, I guess is a better word, move in flying from Texas to D.C. has pissed off the governor so much. Again, Greg Abbott, bitch can't govern, that he's threatened to arrest them all when they get back into Texas at some point. It's a real way to solve a problem, you dick. And interestingly enough, last night, Jim Clyburn, who we know has a very special relationship with President Biden, came out on Rachel Maddow and said that he is supportive. And I think anyone who watches Clyburn knows that he is very measured. He is a bit of a moderate. And he has come out for a carve-out in the filibuster, saying that the filibuster should not apply to voting rights legislation and that we should move and pass these things because this is so crazy. So hopefully it seems like at least their move to leave Texas to get attention to what's happening has caught the attention of Jim Clyburn, and maybe we will see some movement.
Yeah, you know, the actions of Texas Republicans reminds me of this kind of unifying theory I have of like Americanism, like what it means to be American, what Americans think they are versus what they actually are. And the Looney Tunes. I think I've shared this with you before, right?
Yes, and it is so accurate. Please regale me.
Right. So, you know, we're a country that wants to believe that it's made up of Bugs Bunnies. Cool under pressure, getting the best of people who are trying to go after us, you know, keeping ourselves together, being true to ourselves, engaging in trickery, having fun, but always coming out on top. And really, you know, we are not a country of Bugs Bunnies. We're Yosemite Sams.
Yosemite Sam.
At best. And until we admit that we're Yosemites, we need to get away from our Yosemite Samness and back toward our Bugs Bunniness. We're just going to be a bunch of embarrassing fascists. Like, you know, there's nothing cool about Greg Abbott being like, I'm going to arrest these people who don't want to pass this law that nobody wants. Like, chill the fuck out, dude. Like, what is wrong with you?
Like, what is wrong with him? What is wrong with him? Like, also, why would they ever come back? I mean, he's just, it's like his concentric Venn diagram. He doesn't understand how it works.
Right. I mean, he can keep calling special sessions over and over again. So eventually this is probably going to pass unless they make enough noise to convince them not to pass it, which I can't see happening. Or if they make enough noise to get a federal law passed, which might happen. It's frustrating, I think, to see Texas Democrats, a place where they spend so much energy just fighting for their own existence. They have the stones to get on planes and fly out of there and resort to desperate measures in order to preserve voting rights in their state. You know, what remains of voting rights in their state. And Democrats in Washington don't seem as switched on about it. You know, it's like, I think we need more behavior like that from more Democrats.
I agree. Like our friend, Rep. Nicole Collier, who was on the show just a few weeks ago, who was front and center on the plane heading to Washington, D.C. I love her.
Good for her. Good for her. Do you want to talk quickly about another thing that might not be annoying about July? A possible non-annoying thing?
You mean that thing that's TBD?
TBD. Democrats have agreed to a $3.5 trillion budget to advance with the infrastructure deal. So on Tuesday evening, Democrats announced that they'd reached an agreement on a $3.5 trillion reconciliation package, which includes money for climate change, which we were worried about losing when we were talking about this, because I feel like both of us have adapted the attitude that it's better to be impressed than disappointed.
Exactly.
So there's money for climate change. There's money to expand Medicare, and there's also money for other Democratic priorities. They're expanding Medicare to include vision and dental, which I didn't realize were not included in Medicare.
I had no idea that they were not included.
Yeah, holy shit. Bernie Sanders wanted Medicare eligibility to go down to age 60 or 55. He didn't get that, but he did get the basic fucking shit that already should be included in Medicare.
And also, this is just like, you know, we have seen some of our moderate friends be very stubborn and very like my way or the highway. And here is Bernie Sanders. His goal was a $6 trillion package. He agreed to a construct of $3.5 trillion. Bernie has compromised. Bernie has, as chairman, come out with a structure that now all 50 Democrats have to agree to.
Can they do it? I don't know.
Can they do it, Aaron? Therein lies the sugar for the lemonade.
Right. I mean, exactly. The only thing that I guess the thing is that I'm worried about is Joe Manchin, who knows what's going on in his brain. And, you know, Kyrsten Sinema seems to love attention of any kind more than millions of elderly people would like vision and dental coverage. So I'm a little worried about both of those, but I don't know. No Republicans have agreed to this, by the way.
No Republicans have agreed, but again, in the potential sugar for our lemonade, Joe Manchin did this morning say he was reading, he said in a positive-ish way that he was still reading, you know, what was being presented, which none of us have seen because it hasn't been released, the details, where the devil is.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed, maybe Joe Manchin has started listening to Hysteria. What do you think?
He might not like what we say about him or what we think about him, but you know what? If you can't listen to criticism, then you're probably not that. You're not tough enough to be in charge of helping lead the country.
And here's his chance to prove us wrong. And if he does, we'll say that he did.
Yeah, we admit we're wrong. We do it all the time.
Like
totally. We said that we thought July would be 100% annoying, and now we're saying that it might not be. So
we're
look,
calibrating.
Growth. Growth. We have a little bit of a fuck that guy, right? This is a late breaking fuck that guy. Fuck that guy, Ken Starr.
Fuck Ken Starr.
I mean, that guy has been on a fuck that guy list since the 90s, right?
For a long time. But I think he's really just the news story. What was it, last night or this morning that came out?
Yeah, earlier this week, a woman named Judy Hirschman, who is a Republican strategist who had worked alongside Ken Starr for a long time and had sex with him over the course of the year several times. Yeah, literally, don't literally fuck that guy. Do not fuck Ken Starr. Especially don't fuck 2009 Ken Starr. I mean, gross.
Gross.
Gross. This is why we need a union. He is on the not sanctioned work list. So Judy Hirschman wrote a piece on Medium about how Ken Starr is kind of a scumbag and how he has built his entire career defending rapists and pedophiles, which is pretty hard to refute.
There was also the part where Judy says that back in the day when she was working with Brett Kavanaugh, that he, like, verbally assaulted her, and she told Ken Starr about it. And then when he was asked about it during the Christine Blasey Ford testimony, he denied it. So, fuck him. He's all about, like, lying. Wasn't his whole thing that Clinton lied under oath, and here he was?
Yeah, lied about an affair. And then, you know,
what do you know?
King Christian Dominionism is out there defending, like, Jeffrey Epstein. You know,
he was
one of the architects of the Epstein deal that helped him first avoid prosecution in Florida. And he also defended rapists when he was the president of Baylor. He lost his job because he was so into helping the rapists. And he also had an affair himself with one Judy Hirschman, who, you know, appreciate the Medium post, Jude, but like this would have been a lot more helpful a few years ago. Or 10 years ago, you know, like, I mean, I'll give you the most tepid of golf claps for this. Like
this, it is a polite golf clap. It's not a Rudy slow clap, you know?
No, it's a like, you know, kind of grimace while the camera pans over you in the awards ceremony audience, like pretending to clap for someone who you don't really care about.
It might actually be kind of like how Speaker Pelosi clapped for Donald Trump in the State of the Union.
Yeah, Judy Hirschman gets a Pelosi clap for that. Like, thanks, but also, like, where have you been?
Totally.
Like, you know. Okay, so fuck that guy, Ken Starr. Oh, one more thing. Alyssa.
What?
We talked about this on text, but this is the funniest thing. Hirschman's piece on Medium talks about how Starr was basically pouting because he wanted to be on the Supreme Court. Dude.
Come on. You stupid
bitch. Dude, yes. And I want to be an Olympic gymnast in my late 30s. You dumb thumb of a man.
You dumb stupid.
Ken Starr, you'll never be a Supreme Court justice. Everyone will remember you for being a defender of pedophiles and an architect of a Jeffrey Epstein sweetheart deal. Like, get the fuck out of here. He sucks. He sucks. God, Texas is producing just a lot of terrible stuff. Byproducts of Texas. Not really impressive this week, except for the Democrats. Okay, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about an iconic film that turns 20 and what that says about how we assess women's potential. But before we get to that, one of our listeners submitted Fuck That, Guys.
Hi, Hysteria. You know who can get fucked? Elon Musk. Fuck that guy a lot. He's an asshole, a misogynist, an egomaniac. He doesn't pay fucking taxes. He hates unions. He allows his workers to get injured on the job with no recourse. And his most minor offense, but icing on the cake, is that he makes shitty fucking cars that magnetize themselves to other assholes. So fuck off to space, Elon Musk.
This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Power up your life with superior brain and body nutrition products from IQBar. Their plant protein bars are the perfect low-carb breakfast. Their IQ Mix Zero Sugar Hydration Drinks replenish electrolytes. And their IQ Joe Mushroom Coffees will keep you focused all day long.
Start each day right with IQBar's brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. IQBar empowers doers with superior brain and body nutrition. All their products are entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. And today, Hysteria listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text Hysteria to 64000.
One thing I love about IQ Bar is, first of all, right now it's really dry where I am.
Oh, okay.
It is hard for me to stay hydrated. I'll just be going through my day and I'll be like, why am I so like—
Parched.
I'm parched. I'm in a bad mood. I feel like I'm going to pass out. And it's, you got to drink some water. You got to stay hydrated. I really like their IQ Mix Zero Sugar Hydration Drinks because it allows me to rehydrate myself at a time when I feel like the atmosphere is trying to take all my moisture away.
Well, and sometimes you need more than just water.
Sometimes you need more than just water. I also love IQ bars because I love a portable breakfast.
I love a grab-and-go breakfast, no dishes.
Love something I can walk around holding and eating. I like something I can eat in my car without endangering the lives of me and every other motorist on the road. A breakfast burrito, not the safest thing to eat behind the wheel. IQ bar, go ahead and do it. Good for you. Great ingredients. Helps you stay focused and alert throughout the day. And and you don't have to dirty any dishes. Refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bar's, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks.
And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text Hysteria to 64000. Get your discount, text Hysteria to 64000. That's Hysteria to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
And welcome back. Alyssa, do you ever see that something is turning a round number anniversary of years and feel extremely old?
Yeah, I really only like to celebrate the fives and the zeros.
Yeah. So this past week, I saw some celebratory posts about this movie that came out in the year 2001. And they're like, 20 years. I was like, that can't be right. 2001 was 7 years ago. You know?
I'm still 25, dude.
Yeah. That doesn't seem, I am not wearing whisker wash bootcut jeans anymore, but it doesn't feel like Legally Blonde came out 20 years ago. But it did.
It did.
And we're going to talk about what that movie kind of did for people back then, what it means now, and kind of talk a little bit more widely about the utility of playing dumb in situations where you are underestimated. And to talk about all of that and more, I'm going to bring in two women who you know and love. First, she is a comedian and co-host of I Love a Lifetime Movie, along with Naomi Ekperigin, who I've heard of. It's Megan Gailey. Hi, Megan.
Hello, proud floozy and bimbo, signing in.
What's the difference between a floozy and a bimbo?
I honestly think a floozy, which I have been called before, is more like, hey, boys, like is more like flirty and leading with like her sexuality. And a bimbo is more like, what? I don't know, though. That's
Mae West versus Marilyn Monroe.
I believe so.
Okay. I could see that. I think that's a fair definition. But who called you a floozy? Was it an 80-year-old? Was it like a member of a barbershop quartet who disapproved of your shoulders?
No, it was a male comedian who was like, you're kind of like a modern floozy. And I was like, I love that.
And then you said, oh, fiddle faddle.
Oh, man, you're just the cat's pajamas. And last but not least, she is the host of the Noble Blood podcast. And you can order her forthcoming book, Anatomy, A Love Story, wherever you buy books. And she's newly engaged, Dana Schwartz.
Hi. I'm so happy to be back.
You caught the hysteria disease and you are engaged now.
I know. I've been embarrassed to be the only one who wasn't engaged.
And that's why you did this.
That's the only reason.
We are so committed to this pod. It's really incredible.
I mean, it's definitely not a cult. Anybody who thinks it might be a cult, it is not. It is 100% not a cult. That's how you know something's not a cult, is when someone is like, it's not a cult. Dana,
and I chose to get your initials branded above my vagina.
Oh, man. It's with a heavy heart that I say, as an aside, and I will not be taking follow-up questions, that I know the head of that cult's lawyer. I used to be friends with her. I've hung out at her house.
Whoa.
Yeah. She was also Bill Cosby's lawyer. Moving on. Okay. So, Dana, I want to hear everything. Tell me what happened. And also, you were wearing a fabulous dress, and I want to know everything about that also.
Thank you. It was very cute. It was like because Ian and I, my fiance, met in COVID times. It was like a running joke that we hadn't gone on our quote unquote like first date yet because like, you know, we did a lot of take-in and cooking. And so this was our first date. He rented out a movie theater and screened one of my favorite movies.
What movie?
Wow.
You've Got Mail.
Oh. Wow.
I know. And like brought candy and like went out to dinner. And then we were walking to our neighborhood ice cream place and he did the fake. He had untied his shoe without me noticing and got down to tie his shoe. And then proposed as a double fake out. And I had a feeling that maybe this might be the night. Or I was like, okay, there's a few like occasions coming up this summer. So I'm just going to like have my nails done and be dressed up for all of them just in case. And so this was the first of the night. So I bought like a really nice like white dress that I'm like, I can get away with this. It's summer in LA. It's not too obvious if I'm wearing white. And so I was coincidentally wearing a white dress and he hired an amazing woman who was there to take pictures when he actually proposed.
My wedding photographer. She's good.
I'm like, she has to be. It was amazing. It's the best I've ever looked in a photo.
So you suspected that this was coming because why? Like what specific things happened that made you think you were about to be engaged?
We had like talked about weddings and like engagement in like the general sense and that he like knew what kind of diamond I wanted and like what my ring size was. Cause I'm an obvious person. I'm like, hey, isn't it interesting how I only wear gold jewelry and would want a gold band if I ever got engaged? And also I only like emerald cut diamonds. That's just an interesting fun fact about me. Size 6. So he knew. And then I had a friend be like, hey, like, why don't we get our nails done? And we're not friends who have ever gotten manicures together. And then he was like, yeah, like get dressed up, like maybe do your hair for this date. Like he like, I think what maybe was a little nervous and I was sort of reading that he was like planning something.
Yeah, I think
the hints were there.
the friend being like, let's randomly get a manicure is like, come on.
Awesome.
And also, you don't want, I'm strongly of the mind that, like, if you're asking someone to marry you, you shouldn't be, like, nervous about what the answer is going to be.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to surprise her with marriage and she'll be floored. Like, we've reached the point in our relationship where it's like, okay, I think we're moving towards marriage and on the same page about all the important things. So now it was just the question of when.
Oh, man. You know what? Every single smart woman I know who has gotten married was like, oh yeah, I knew it was coming. Like they all like had an inkling. Am I stupid? I was totally surprised.
I had no idea.
I had no idea.
I guess.
Really?
Yeah. I was like completely, I didn't have my nails done. I was completely like, what is going on? But honestly, I'm like, everybody else could pick up on the signs. And in retrospect, I should have, but I just didn't.
He also flew, my family flew in to surprise me. My family's in Chicago, so they were.
I mean, unbelievable.
When we got back to the house after ice cream, I was like, oh my God, I have to call my mom. And he's like, well, like, why don't we like take a beat and like walk home? And like, and then of course, like I walk in, it's like a surprise party. I watch a lot of Columbo. So I feel like I had pieced together that something was happening, even if I didn't know what it was. My like little sister, it was my dad's birthday. And I was like, what are you doing for dad's birthday? And she was like, oh, we're barbecuing. And I was like, mom and dad don't have a grill at the new apartment.
Oh my gosh. Honestly, if there was such thing as a fiance all-star game, it sounds like your fiance would be the captain of that team.
Yeah.
Like captain of the American League fiance all-star team.
He nailed it. Surprise family, excellent ring, romantic, like first date. So now we can be like, we got engaged on our first date.
Oh.
Oh, he check. Ian Carmel, beautiful. All-star.
Beautiful.
I am so happy for you. And I just couldn't be happier for you. That's so great, Dana.
Thank you so much. And this episode, I feel like, is perfect, like talking about Legally Blonde and like stereotypically feminine things, because like I'm getting so excited to get married.
Yeah, I could say it's you know what? It's going to be a process that is going to be like eye-opening, planning and stuff. But I think that like you're smart and you'll figure out ways around some of the things that drive people crazy.
I love a spreadsheet. I really do.
You're going to love planning a wedding. It's going to be it's going to be like your favorite thing. Okay, so Dana, I'm going to start with you since you brought up Legally Blonde and like stereotypically feminine things. So on July 13th, it was Legally Blonde's 20th anniversary. It came out in 2001, like we mentioned. How did you feel about it when you first saw it? And how do you feel about the film now?
I loved it when I first saw it. Even if I didn't, like, couldn't articulate maybe why or, like, what I liked about it, I just always thought it was, like, a ridiculously fun movie. I liked the musical when it came out. I always had fun with Legally Blonde. And now I feel like I appreciate it even more for, like, it being a really feminist film in a way that is disguised as being sort of retrograde, but is actually really progressive.
Expand on that.
This idea that women can be intelligent, not only in spite of their interest in fashion and stereotypically feminine things, but because of them, like Elle's final victory isn't that she's transformed into a navy suit wearing, you know, what's typically thought of as like a quote unquote smart woman, but that she shows up in this like pink suit and heels. And it's her knowledge of fashion and beauty that like lets her win this case. And she's never a cruel person. She's like the most kind person throughout the entire movie. She loves supporting her female friends. Her female friends, like, and I don't understand why she wants to go to Harvard Law School, but support her. Like, it's a very accepting, kind movie about women. And I like that it lets women be both feminine and smart, where so much of, like, a strong female character, in air quotes, is, like, a woman with a ponytail and a leather jacket who, like, rides a motorcycle and just, like, is a hot man. You know, she's just a man, but that men could have sex with.
I mean, yeah, I think one thing that I think now looking back on Legally Blonde is that It's a movie like all movies that came out then that is a product of its time. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily reflect things that we know and that are part of the popular discourse today. But I agree with you. I think it's like uplifting and cool in a way that a lot of movies in that genre weren't. Megan, as a self-described floozy, did you identify with Elle Woods, the character, and do you identify with like sort of the way that she uses people underestimating her against them?
I don't think when it came out, I felt like I identified with her, but then now I feel like I identify more with her. And that may be just that I'm in a male-dominated field. And when I was 15, I was in high school. So it's like being out in the world and being like, oh my God, people do actually treat you this way has made me realize my inner Elle Woods, I think. Mm-hmm.
Alyssa, you've worked in super like high-powered positions and you've remained true to yourself through all of that. Did Elle Woods resonate with you as a character? And like, do you think that she is important to a new generation of women that you've observed?
I don't know if she's important to a new generation. I do know that she was important to me back. I mean, full disclosure, I think I was roughly Dana's age now when the movie came out. I was 25 when Legally Blonde came out. And there was something about seeing someone. Elle never changed who she was to be able to thrive at Harvard or in the law firm, wherever she ended up, even though people tried to make her feel super uncomfortable. And I think that part of my, which I actually ended up, God, I didn't, guys, I should have fucking footnoted Elle Woods. But in my book, I wrote about how I became so much better at my job when I could wear clothes that I really felt comfortable in and that represented me. And so one of my, which we have, I have actually talked about as an Elle Woods moment, was when I went to work when I had become deputy chief, and I didn't realize I had this big meeting with all these generals and military people in the Situation Room, and I had a shirt just bedazzled with hearts. I mean, I was dressed like a fucking Care Bear. And you know what? I was like, oh, the thing is it because I wasn't faking who I was when I went down that they were kind of like, she's cool. Like, she's fine. She must think a lot of us that she wore a fucking sleeveless heart shirt from Kate Spade. And so for me, it was like, you know, but that moment in time was probably about 10, not even, maybe 8 years after Elle Woods came out. But no, at the time when it came out, I mean, I saw it multiple times in the theaters, you guys. And I was just like, this is fucking great. Look at her go. And like, also, I wish Kieran were here because it's a bit of a rag on Harvard. But, you know, I got rejected from every Ivy League school. And so I was like really excited that Elle Woods got in.
Yeah, the Harvard of it really gives me comedy writer sort of PTSD, because like if you go to Harvard, I mean, it's the same, I guess it's the same maybe in any industry. If you go to Harvard, you're going to get a job. And so even though Elle is like this rich girl and nepotism obviously benefits her in so many different ways, her like going to this place where they will not accept her, but like is the breeding ground for what she wants to do, is a metaphor for every single like field in life. Like if you want to be in comedy, you go to Harvard. If you want to be a doctor, you go to Harvard. If you want to be a lawyer, you go to Harvard. Like if you want to be a writer, you should go to Harvard. It's all these things. It's like not all of us can go to Harvard, but Elle can.
And did.
I'll say, as a girl who was never like the sorority type, like I just like, I never was like one of like the prettier girls growing up and like wasn't in that like group, I really liked it because like Elle is so nice as a person. Mm-hmm. Like she's doesn't like, I was always like a little bit scared of sorority girls just in theory.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And she's just so nice. And that's like, I think one of the main reasons I like the movie is you just like sink into getting to feel like you're friends with Elle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's like the platonic ideal of the sorority girl.
Yeah.
Like she's like beautiful and she has like a very distinct sense of style and she's confident and she's sexy, but also she's not like a cunt ever. Like she's never cruel. She's never like she never acts like a jerk to anybody. And even when she's like getting one over on people, she's nice about it. Like when she's winning arguments, she's like nice about it. Even when she tells Selma Blair's character.
Yeah.
When she tells her that she, yes, when she tells Vivian that she looks constipated, she still like says it in a way that's kind of nice.
And there's that moment where she like, she knows how she's perceived. Like she knows that she's blonde and hot and she uses that for good when that boy is getting bullied by the girls he asks out. Mm-hmm. And then she goes up to him and like makes it seem like he rejected her. Mm-hmm. Like she uses her power for good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that Elle Woods is sort of like, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. And Elle Woods is a great character and Reese Witherspoon just like knocked it out of the park playing her. But it, when I saw it, it reminded me of like Dolly Parton, kind of. Like Dolly Parton has always embraced, like always embraced what people, yeah, it's like let them think what they're going to think about her. I think her nickname is like the Iron Butterfly or something like that because she's like so sweet and beautiful, but like she's not to be fucked with. Like she, and she will like smile the whole time that she's getting exactly what she wants, and she's not doing it in a way that hurts other people. But like for a new, and Dolly also has a song called Dumb Blonde, which, you know, I think is sort of along the same lines. But I wanted to kind of pivot to like a larger conversation, which is the idea of playing dumb, because there are, you know, the moment in the movie where Elle Woods says Harvard, what, like it's hard. You know, it seems like she's kind of leaning into people's expectation that she's not going to be good enough or she's not going to be smart enough or she doesn't know how much work she's going to have to do. Has there ever been a time, I guess, Dana, I'll start with you. Has there ever been a time that you have been underestimated because of your gender or your age or anything like that, where you, instead of fighting it, have been like, you know what, I'm just going to let this person underestimate me so that I can surprise them with how awesome I am?
I think sometimes my persona has never been that of the bimbo. I don't think that's my aesthetic, or I couldn't pull it off if I tried. That's just like, I'm very much brunette with her hair pulled back is my vibe. so I do feel like that I, on some level, like I can't do that. But I will say like in job interviews or like, you know, book publishing things, like sometimes I play up a little bit like, oh my God, isn't this crazy? Like, I know that I'm here because I'm almost like embarrassed or intimidated to be like, yeah, I worked really fucking hard and here I am. Like, I think sometimes I'm like, I'm so lucky, like, and make it seem more like it was just like a fun accident.
Right. Well, do you think if you didn't do that, that there could be consequences in a worst case scenario? That if you didn't act like surprised and like, oh my goodness, I'm shocked by the fact that I did a smart thing. Do you think that there are people who would maybe punish you for that?
Yeah, I do think like to be like considered likable, you sort of have to be shocked by success. And if it looks like you try hard, people think you're a try hard. I mean, it's like Anne Hathaway syndrome, right? When she like got the Oscar and she was like, it came true. Like people were so mad at her that it's like, oh, we get it. You work to get an Oscar. Like people hate women who look like they try hard and people want to celebrate, you know, a woman like, more like Jennifer Lawrence. She's like, yeah, I'm just like a regular girl. And here I am. Isn't it amazing that I'm like hot and successful?
I just farted. Ha ha. I'm Jennifer Lawrence. Megan, have you ever played into people underestimating you in order to kind of like get ahead?
Absolutely. It happens every time I go to a new comedy club because and I think I do a little bit of the L too of like, I'm actually not nice all the time. I can be quote unquote like mean on stage or like that persona is like bitchier. And so I'm like over the top nice off stage and kind of over the top like, wow, this room is beautiful. Like it's the first comedy club I've ever been to because they just hate us. it feels like a defense mechanism for sure.
Interesting. Alyssa, do you have any experience playing up people's underestimating you?
Not really.
I mean, you know, people, if anything, I think I've always been underestimated because of my age. I mean, not now, please. I'm not talking about now. But like, you know, back in the day, the time I wore the heart shirt that I mentioned was actually a time when I was like, you know, okay, I was meeting all these people for the first time. They were decorated generals and members of the military who were going to explain to me how the White House military office works and what some of the bigger issues that they face are. And so at first, and I guess this is one way of doing it, but my assistant came in with a read book that was like 500 pages the night before. And he said, look, I've gone through this and I've flagged all the things that I think you know about that you can talk about in the meeting tomorrow. And I was like, yeah, but that's not going to make him, if I come in like a know-it-all, that's not going to make him feel like, you know, it's like, oh, who's this 30-something-year-old person who knows what we know that we've been doing for 30 years? So what I actually did is I went through and I tabbed all the things that I really didn't understand. And so I went into the meeting and I kind of led with curiosity. I was like, look, there's a lot in here I understand. There's a lot that I would like you to explain to me, which I truly needed. Like I wasn't playing a game, but I figured that – but that tactic was one that I thought they would see as a sign of respect more than me trying to come in and pretend like I knew exactly what they did and I thought the outcome would be better. And it was once they stopped trying to salute me in my heart shirt. So that was one time. That was probably my biggest example of being like, okay, like what's my approach here? And I went with going with, you know, expressing what I didn't know. But I don't think I tried to play like I was dumb, because my problem is that people, I think, were always looking for me to do that so they can have a reason to be like, see, she can't fucking do this. She's a child. And so I think I always played up. Well, that's as if any of the pod bros are listening to this, they'll be like, you were a fucking clown. What are you even talking about? But I was a clown with them, you know? I was a clown with them, not in situations like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I found that like short term, it's sometimes saves some headache to just play into the like, oh, okay, you think I need all this explained to me? All right, I'm going to let you explain it to me. But long term, I've realized that like unless you – stop going out of your way to make people feel useful when they're not actually useful, when they're being condescending. Unless you put a stop to that, that's just going to be how people treat you for your whole life. And it gets really, really annoying. And I think that I maybe when I was younger went a little too far in letting people feigning not incompetence, but feigning need in order to make people feel more useful than they actually were to me. And now it's something that like, I get so irritated when people over explain things to me that I'm kind of a bitch. Like it's like, it's become like a callus in my heart. And I'm not at a place where it's easy for me to be like, oh, really? Can you please help me with this and explain it to me when I already know how to do something? Like, I was just thinking about that scene in Mean Girls when Katie pretends that she can't do math so that the cute boy helps her, Aaron Samuels.
Yeah.
And
you looked up like you didn't know his name. Like, is that it?
Aaron Samuels.
I was thinking at that moment, why do I know this? And why have I forgotten so many other things? Like, why is this how my brain organizes information? Like, fucking dumb brain. I've found that like I exhausted my reserves of patience for people who need me to do work to make them feel useful. Mm-hmm. It's like, Why am I I think that people like the Elle Woods character and people like a Dolly Parton, a real life Dolly Parton, or people like somebody who can kind of strategically take a breath and assess a situation like, okay, would it be more useful to me to let this person feel like I need them intellectually, or would it be more useful to me to teach them a lesson? I always go with teach them a lesson, which isn't always the right, it isn't always the right call. But when I think about the character of Elle Woods and the playing dumb thing, and we can say dumb blonde, but I feel like dumb blonde is like really limiting. I think it's just the expectation that any woman who cares about how she looks is automatically stupid. I think like, leaning into that is not something I can do anymore. I've like reached the end of my ability to do that because it's like teaching people how to treat me a way that I don't want to be treated.
I'm just too competitive. Like even if I get the sense that like the way I play Scrabble is wildly unattractive, I still, I can't help it. Like I play Scrabble with my boyfriend to the point where, like, he's like, we can't play Scrabble anymore. We don't. He doesn't let me play Scrabble anymore. He says I get shark eyes.
Oh, wow. And I think that I'm playing dumb in situations in life now where it's something I don't want to do. Or it's like something I want for, you know, it's that, like, it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission. So it's like, oh, this door, where does it go? I'm more like, or like when if anything is going wrong with my car, I literally throw my hands up and go, I cannot do this. And there will be a man come and be like, I'll save you. And sometimes it's my husband, but I'll go to, like, I drove my car somewhere and I go, I just don't know what to do. And they just fixed it for me, even though it was a very easy thing that I probably could have done. But I'm like, I don't know what to do, and I can get this man to do it for me. And I don't know if that's feminist, but I felt like it was an anecdote I needed to share.
Well, I don't think everything needs to be feminist. Like, you sometimes just need to survive in the existing structure that we live inside. Like, you don't, there's no way to live every single day with every micro decision you make being the most feminist thing possible.
Yeah, I'm lazy and I want men to do shit for me.
Look, women do a lot. Women do a lot. And a lot of the stuff is just stuff that we're expected to do and we're not really thanked for. And so I think that it's totally within your rights to sometimes be like, I can't do this. How do I buckle my seatbelt or whatever you need? One thing I wanted to ask everybody is, have you read about, like, the background of the, like, Legally Blonde screenplay and, like, how with the original? Okay, so Dana has. Dana, what do you know about, like, the backstory of Legally Blonde?
I mean, I think I just know what everyone else does, which is that I read the oral history in the New York Times. And also when I was at Entertainment Weekly, we had a rom-com issue, and one of our writers, who I'm so wildly jealous that it wasn't me, sat with the screenwriters and did, like, a watch rewatch.
Wow.
Wow. So I heard that in the original, like, concept of the movie, they were thinking of it more along the lines of, like, American Pie, like a kind of raunchy sex comedy about this, like, hot chick who is the first ever hot chick to go to a hard law school, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know, which is weird because, like, I was just talking to my brother this morning about how, like, silly it is to be like, what if a hot girl did this smart thing? Or hot girls haven't been doing smart things forever. Like, Lucille Ball was doing comedy in the 50s and she was better than almost everybody and she was fucking beautiful. But every time there's a beautiful female comedian, people are like, she's beautiful and funny. It's like, no, how do you forget every single time? Like, how do you not remember?
You know who was wildly funny? Marilyn Monroe.
Marilyn Monroe was hilarious.
You watch Some Like It Hot and you're like, oh, she's really funny.
Oh, yeah. She's super funny, but nobody thinks that, like, somebody that attractive, nobody who makes you want to fuck them can be smart or funny. They exist to be fucked, not or funny.
I got
to
switch careers.
The problem with Legally Blonde in the abstract, like in the ether, is it does, for people who don't, like, analyze or interpret it on any deep level, does it raise this expectation that now women have to be smart and also look like Elle Woods?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but missing the point is, like, one of the main things we do as a country.
Yeah, we should put that on the dollar bill. That's the most American thing on earth.
It's why people think Tony Soprano was cool instead of, like, kind of a stupid idiot who felt like he was a failure as a dad. Like, he was kind of cool, but only because he was funny. People who think that, like, Tony Montana was cool, and it's like, no, he was extremely fucked up. The Scarface mm-hmm. guy is not cool. You missed mm-hmm. the point of that movie also.
Mm-hmm. But there is this shitty expectation, I think, with, like, the Bond girl trope also, that, like, all nuclear physicists also have to look like Halle Berry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know a single nuclear physicist, period, much less one who looks like Halle Berry. Okay, I want to wrap up this part of the conversation by talking about men and playing dumb. Have you ever seen a man play dumb and weaponize naivete? Alyssa, I feel like you've been in, like, places where men should know better. like in the halls of government. Have you noticed a man trying to play like he doesn't know what he's doing when he actually does?
You know, not off the top of my head. I mean, like, it's not just off the top of my head. I thought about this a little bit. And there's like not a real example where I can think of someone being just stupid, like on purpose, like trying to get their way by being not smart. But I mean, you know,
I think about the Me Too moment. Mm-hmm. I think that entire, every defense of like a man accused of sexual misconduct was like, I'm dumb.
That's that's a very good example. That's a very, I was trying to think of like real people, but I mean, like in my day to day, but no, I mean, that's, I mean, every man who was like, what do you mean? I didn't know I had a button under my desk that locked the door. It's like, how could that have scared anybody? How could that have been wrong?
Right.
Or like Black Lives Matter and guys being like, oh, wow, I guess racism does exist in this country.
Right. They're bandwagoning that like very, very basic thing that they they definitely already know, but now feel ashamed that they weren't like really doing anything about before.
Yeah.
Megan, have you ever seen an example of a man play dumb or weaponize naivete?
Yes.
And did that reputation stick to him after he was done playing dumb for that one incident?
Yes, I have seen men do this, and it seems to be a trope of men that grew up in upper middle class or richer households. And I've seen them do it as like a, I'm just like you. And it's like, you're not. you went to boarding school and you know a lot more, but they're trying to be humble, I think, but it comes across as like very disingenuous.
Like people pretending they're like salt of the earth people, but really
exactly.
They're...
Yes. Okay. And also people that are like, I hustle, I grind. And then it's like, you have a trust fund. Like, what's going on? that happens a lot.
Yeah. Now that you bring that up, that kind of reminds me of this, like, it's like J.D. Vance syndrome, even though he didn't come up with this. J.D. Vance is a writer of a shitty book and a guy who is polling in the single digits in a race for Senate in Ohio, despite having, you know, lots and lots of venture capital money and big Republican donor money being thrown toward his campaign. He is a doughy little inside boy who's trying to represent himself as a big, tough alpha male, which, whatever. But J.D. Vance kind of is somebody who went to Ivy League schools. He has spent a lot of time in New York City. He has millions of dollars. But he loves to act like he's just a, aw, shucks, I'm just a country boy. Like, I don't know anything. What are shoes? anyone want to join my jug band? And, like, I think the thing that's really frustrating about people like that, about usually men, but it's just anybody with like a privileged background who's trying to pretend as though whatever advantages that they have don't exist. Not only do they not exist, they've never even heard of them. You know, like Ivy League, never heard of it.
It's like when Ted Cruz wears jeans. That's the vibe that he gives off.
Oh, Dana, why did you make me think about Ted Cruz wearing jeans? But you're right. I think that's exactly right. It's just, or in like the George W. Bush all hat, no cattle thing. Like a guy who grew up in Connecticut pretending to be a Texas rancher.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, did you know that George W. Bush was the inspiration for the guy who played Elle Woods' boyfriend in Legally Blonde?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow, that's funny.
That actor decided, he was like, okay, I'm going to play, you know, this kind of rich, entitled legacy boy. And he used George W. Bush as inspiration. But I think the problem with men who do that, who aw shucks, or super privileged people who do that, so like, you know, white women, rich people, whatever, is that that doesn't stick to them in people assuming that they're incompetent. You know,
never.
Like if you're somebody, if you're like a woman who cares a lot about her looks or who wears a lot of makeup or who like does her hair a certain way, that sticks to you. Like before you even say anything, people assume you don't know what you're talking about. And with people like a J.D. Vance or whatever, they're still going to get like jobs at lobbying firms because the people who are in power actually know that they really are smart. They're just like trying to pull one over on the people who they think are too stupid to know the difference. Okay. I know I said this was the last question, but this is the real last question. Legally Blonde 3 is happening. I think Mindy Kaling is writing it. Is that right? I think she's co-writing the screenplay. Alyssa, what would you like to see happen in Legally Blonde 3?
Oh my God, I don't know. Do we want Elle Woods to be on the Supreme Court? Do we want her to be a member of Congress? She might be running for president. I don't know. Sky's the limit for Elle Woods.
Okay. Megan, what do you want to see Elle Woods doing?
I'd love to see some Black people. And I would love to see some maybe people of color, some different shapes and sizes. And maybe not everybody is rich. So maybe just make the cast a little fun. Maybe we're not at Harvard. Maybe we're at a state school doing something. And, and Ella is trying to get tenured there. I don't know.
Dana, what do you want to see Elle Woods doing in Legally Blonde 3?
I want to see her bring a case before the Supreme Court.
Yes.
I want to see her as a lawyer.
A Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah.
Put her in a time machine and send her back to the 60s and 70s. Have her be like this little tiny woman arguing cases in front of the Supreme Court and having this like, oh, anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want. I want the RBG movie, but with Elle Woods. You know, her Luke Wilson is such a Marty Ginsburg.
Yes, he really is. That's a great point. I would also love to see her as like an Amal Clooney type character, like a human rights lawyer who's like doing stuff that really isn't going to bring her fame or riches. Like maybe she's given all of her money away. Maybe all she does is go around and like, maybe she works with the Innocence Project. I would love to see.
Wow, we need her to be woke. We definitely want woke Elle.
Oh, what if she has a baby and she's one of those women who like is like, I'm going to be a lawyer and also breastfeed while I give my closing argument.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
That would be breastfeeding in Legally Blonde 3. You heard it here first.
I think that's the best idea I've had. I stand by it.
I think that it would be really hard to get past some studio execs, but if you could get it through, they would be, I'm just imagining them being like, great stuff here. Couple notes. Does she have to breastfeed with her breasts?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I feel petty.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday, and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion, and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling, and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Welcome back. We've reached almost the end of the show, but not quite the end of the show, which means we're going to tell you about what we're feeling petty about this week. But first, before we get there, a little bit of housekeeping. So maybe it was like 6 weeks ago, right, Alyssa? 6 weeks, 2 months. What is time? I'm becoming
what
like a dog, like a dog or a baby. I have like no sense of time. I don't know. What month is it? We asked for listener submissions for a Fuck That Guy segment. And we played one for you earlier this episode for Elon Musk that made Alyssa and I both chuckle heartily. Fuck him to space, indeed. But we got so many great submissions from you all when we asked for them. We would love to hear more of them. So if you have a public figure, man or woman, any gender, who you believe deserves a hearty fuck that guy, you can record a 30-second voice memo and you can send it to us at hysteria@crooked.com. Caroline and the rest of us will listen to them, screen them, and feature a few of them in upcoming episodes. And we love hearing them, you guys. You're all so, so mad at these people. And and in your anger, you bring us along. And we really appreciate it. Anger is so, it's something to feel, you know? Something to feel. Okay, let's get to I Feel Petty. This week, Alyssa, do you want to start us off?
Guys, how is it that it's 2021 and we still can't conquer tags and shirts and pants? Like, why do they still exist? I can't even. So a while ago, I got a haircut. And when she cut my hair, she did a funny thing that made the back of my neck itch. And so now I already have that sensation and it won't go away. But it's like every time I put a shirt with a tag on, it just drives me crazy. But you can't cut them out because if you cut them out, it's still itchy. Yeah. You have like the jagged little edge. And if you're lucky enough to get a shirt that has the tag like ironed on in the back, there's one on the side. And mm-hmm. it's like, can't you just use better ink and tell me how to wash my clothes without three layers of paper either on my neck or my side? And that I would ultimately have to cut out. And so anyway, it's been driving me crazy. I've tried a lot of different things. None of them have worked, including trying to tape them down with like painter's tape or masking tape. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So
and stitch ripper. Have you tried using like a quilter's tool stitch ripper to get it
out? No, you know what? That's a very good idea. I'm glad I raised it here today because I actually have one of those. And so I will try to do that.
But you shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to.
I know, but I was walking. So I have these yoga pants on today and the tag is so annoying. It only isn't annoying if you flip it up. And I was at the farm stand and I bent over to pick up stuff and they're like, you know, your tag's hanging out. And I was like, it's the only way it's comfortable. And they were like, cool.
Be careful with those seam rippers. This is goes to your point. I've tried to cut tags out and then done it wrong and then made a hole in the side of my shirt.
See? Why can't there be a better way? It's 2021. If Richard Branson can go to space, can't we have tags in our clothes that aren't annoying?
Yeah, Richard Branson should have to do penance for going to space by wearing an outfit consisting entirely of tags on the inside for the next several months because he should have done something better than fucking send himself to space. God. Shirt of what's it called? Horsehair shirt? Or like self punch. That's what you should do. You should have a horsehair shirt of tags. Okay, I will go second. Mine is also clothing related, and it's sort of a positive I Feel Petty. This summer's women's fashions can best be described as sack like. And I have to say, let's keep it that way. Let's keep women's fashions sack like. I have I'm about 6 months pregnant, and so now I can't wear my regular clothes anymore. But I can buy regular sack shaped dresses mm-hmm. in this season styles, and they totally fit me now, and they will fit me a couple months from now, and they'll also fit me when I'm beyond this stage in my life. So I just really appreciate being able to go out wearing like a big cotton sack, not feeling like my body is like on display. I just really appreciate the option. So I think it's totally cool if you're one of those people who likes to show off, if you like wearing tight clothes and showing a lot of skin, that is totally fine and more power to you. I just want the option available every summer moving forward to buy and wear a sack, to have mm-hmm. it on hand, and to have it be viewed as an acceptable thing for me to wear in public. Because mm-hmm. I really appreciate, like, I feel so free and so comfortable. I don't know why I wasn't just wearing sacks all the time before. So, yeah, this is for you, nap dresses, prairie dresses, giant floor-length T-shirts with absolutely no waist definition. I love it all. I love it all, and I want you to be around, not exclusively. Let's have some range for people who want to dress differently than that. But I want this around forever. That's what I feel petty about this week.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree. I've been doing caftans since I was Dana's age.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dana, what do you feel petty about this week?
This is so little, and I do feel petty. It's like petty in the petty extreme. I know that we have like every streaming service and it's kind of annoying that we have to be like, oh, okay, what's on Disney Plus? What's on Amazon Prime? What's on Hulu? What's on Netflix? And like, fine, I've accepted that. My I feel petty is that the volume is wildly inconsistent between the streamers. I don't know if you've noticed this. Disney Plus is way quieter than every other streamer. So we watch Disney Plus and we have to turn the volume up. And then we go back to Netflix and it blasts. And I'm like, That shouldn't happen. It's dumb, but I don't, there are so many things in my day that I have to remember, and I don't want to have to remember that after I watch Loki, I have to turn the volume back way down or else I'll like scare my cats with how loud Netflix is. So that's my I feel petty. I know it's petty, but I do fully think that they should fix that problem.
They do it with commercials too. And someone told me that that's illegal, but they're doing it. So I don't want to call the cops on them, but I'm upset.
Look, if Congress can't pass infrastructure, the least they can do is put in some mechanism to enforce the law to make everything the same volume. It's not that. Just
thank
do
you.
A single goddamn thing, please.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please do a single goddamn thing. Okay, Megan, what do you feel petty about this week?
Okay, so to me, there's nothing pettier than just true self-promotion. And so I would like to let everyone know that last Wednesday, July 7th, and henceforward is Megan Gailey Day in the city of Indianapolis. I have been given my own day by a Hysteria listener who is a city councilwoman. And I don't know.
What?
My husband doesn't have a day. My exes don't have days. None of my enemies have days. None of my heroes have days. I have my own fucking day in Indianapolis, and we're going to do something special. I don't know what yet, but mark your calendars, July 7th till the end of eternity. It's going down in Indianapolis.
Well, that's great.
That
I
is
just signed,
great.
I just signed a contract extension, so we can have a big old Hysteria celebration next year on Megan Gailey Day.
Yes!
Well, that's our show. Megan, Dana, thank you for stopping by. Dana, you're like on vacation, right? A newly engaged?
Yeah, we had like a little engagement moon in Malibu, but we're back now.
Yeah, well,
gorgeous in Malibu, an engagement moon.
I know. It's too much, Dana. It's too much. It's crossed the line to too much. No, but thank you so much for taking the time in both of your busy weeks to come and hang out. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die. And thanks to all of you, the listeners, for hanging out with us this week. There will be more for you next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Our digital team is Nar Melkonian, Mia Kelman, and Matt DeGroot. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support every week.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday, and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion, and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling, and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.